You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
To get your blood sugar under control. And the best part is the main ingredient and solution is a common spice found in most kitchens. Watch the free video for yourself at diabetic99.com. Watch for free at diabetic99.com. Get back the quality of your life and free yourself from diabetes medication. Go to diabetic99.com.
French authorities can now ban suspected jihadists from leaving the...
The news is sponsored by Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc.
In America, we believe in a future that is better than today. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has been working hard for their clients' futures, never taking a bailout, helping generations achieve dreams, buy homes, put their kids through college, retire how they want to. Today, Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you feel more confident about your financial future. Put the strength of a global financial leader to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton, Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your dreams and goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. That's 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated. Member FINRA and SIPC.
Good afternoon. I'm Pat Smits. The program, It's the Law. Sorry, I can't seem to tell you about the weather because we're having a problem connecting to the weather information. But we can talk about legal issues today. And in fact, I'm going to save one thing for the next hour when the sports guys are on, and that is, once again, our governor is making news around the country. And in fact, if you are interested in sports, you may be interested in what was going on at the Green Bay Packer Dallas game when he actually was there. He was also at the Philadelphia game with Jerry Jones, and he was in with Jerry Jones when they played in Dallas. And so our governor is getting around and not necessarily shedding a good light on New Jersey. But in any event, what I'm going to do today, as I said, I'm Pat Smits. The program is It's the Law. I do not have a guest today, but I wanted to bring you up to date on some of what's going on in the state with respect to legal issues. So the one of the things that would be interesting for many people is the fact that there seems to be a strong rebound in 2014 for mergers and acquisitions in the United States. And deal making involving New Jersey was no exception. It's a long awaited development that merger and acquisition lawyers, M&A lawyers, chalked up largely to the return of confidence in the marketplace. So the 30 richest deals, including a New Jersey-based target or acquirer, had a combined value of $169 billion. And this was reported in the Law Journal Annual Survey. This is used, they used data provided by Thomson Reuters Financial. So that is, some good news about the economy and certainly about the deals, the mergers and acquisition deals that are going on. So what about some of the cases that have been going on? Well, there was a summary judgment case that was affirmed by the appellate division, and it was affirmed, and the summary judgment order was affirmed because the appellate division agreed with the motion judge that there was no evidence showing that it was reasonably foreseeable that the plaintiff would have been shot by a third party while attending the fraternity party event. Therefore, the defendant's fraternity, the defendants, who in fact are the fraternity members, and they leased the house, but they breached no legal duty to the plaintiff under the circumstances, and therefore were entitled to a judgment dismissing his negligent claims. So for anyone who's interested in this, the plaintiff was Peguero, P-E-G-U-E-R-O, versus Tau Kappa Epsilon. And it was decided by the appellate division, the decision written by Judge Lighthouse, who's an excellent jurist. And but this was what they called a tort and premises liability case. So for anyone who would be interested in that, and certainly in some instances it would seem to me that parents who are sending their children off to college and signing leases or signing, you know, for a son or daughter to live in a sorority or fraternity house, they certainly might be interested in looking into this and even talking to their insurance agent. But there also is a was a criminal law case that probably is not that interesting to most people, but it there's another one that might be more interesting, and that is that in order to provide a violation of a certain criminal statute, the state must prove beyond a reasonable doubt both that a defendant knowingly possessed a firearm and that he or she did so while knowingly on the property of an educational institution. And that's what the statute refers to as far as firearms and the possession of firearms on an educational institution. Now, they also found that because the mandatory minimum sentence under the statute is based on a judicial finding of fact rather than a finding by the jury, it was unconstitutional under case law, and the also, however, the sentence was not excessive because the trial court's analysis of aggravating and mitigating factors was supported by the record. So the I think the question there is, you know, what in fact you have to follow statutes. And by the way, it doesn't make any difference that we don't know that there's a statute or a law on something. So another case recently where the New Jersey Supreme Court has told a federal appeals court that there is no reason to depart from a more expansive interpretation of what constitutes an employee as opposed to an independent contractor when it comes to resolving wage and hour disputes. Now, this was a unanimous ruling in Hargrove versus Sleepy's, and our Supreme Court, our New Jersey Supreme Court, said that the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit, which is considering an appeal in an hour and wage a wage and hour dispute, should apply the ABC test that has been used by the New Jersey Department of Labor for two decades. So that obviously anybody, any business person, really does need to look at what constitutes an employee in New Jersey, because very often it's easy for a business to say, well, this is just an independent contractor. And, of course, it means that the business does not pay the Social Security, the employer's part of Social Security, and there are other things that an employee has protections for that an independent contractor doesn't. However, don't run afoul of that law. In other words, be very careful before you say you're hiring somebody as an independent contractor. rather than an employee. So now the Third Circuit considers a Muslim surveillance suit, and it was the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit, and that is the circuit that New Jersey's in, focused on standing to file the lawsuit when it heard arguments. And these arguments were just the other day, January 13th. And they focused on standing when they heard the arguments regarding whether to reinstate a suit over surveillance of New Jersey Muslims by the New York Police Department. And what the judges on the circuit questioned lawyers, and their questioning was focused on whether Muslim citizens were injured by the New York Police Department's large-scale surveillance program, and whether the department's actions in the surveillance caused the injury. And this is obviously, the majority of Muslims law-abiding, and the question is, at what point is it appropriate to put a group of people under surveillance, a large group of people? And that is certainly the case here, that whether or not the police department's surveillance was focused, or whether or not it was just, if you're a Muslim citizen, you might be put under scrutiny and surveillance just because you're a Muslim. So what else is happening? There was a decision, as I said, in Hargrove versus Sleepy's, and that was a whether or not the ABC test in New Jersey, that's derived from the New Jersey Unemployment Compensation Act, governs whether a plaintiff is an employee or an independent contractor for the purposes of resolving a wage payment or wage and hour claim. Now, what that statute, if you're interested in it, and people should be interested if they're planning on hiring independent contractors rather than employees, it is New Jersey statutes annotated 43:21-19 (1)(n)(6). That's what governs whether or not someone should be considered an employee. And it's not just what you want to tell them. So, interesting, for some people, is that the appeals court, the appellate division, in September 2014, the holding that lawyers must thoroughly counsel, and even if the clients are sophisticated clients, and they must thoroughly counsel them on deal making, and that will remain the law going forward. Since the state Supreme Court declined last month to hear the case, and that was a transactional attorneys say they've taken heed. And the case is Cotone, C-O-T-T-O-N-E, versus Fox Rothschild. And Fox Rothschild is one of the larger firms here in New Jersey. And the appellate division found that they had a duty as a matter of law to explain contract terms, even if they're unambiguous, and the client, and even if the client personally negotiated the terms. So in other words, it puts a real burden on attorneys that they must thoroughly explain contracts, and even if the terms are unambiguous, and even if the client personally negotiated them. So for example, I handle family law matters, and I always totally review every provision of a settlement agreement. But in this case, and of course that would be reasonable and necessary because my clients are not necessarily sophisticated when it comes to matrimonial law. But in this case, what the Supreme Court said is even when a client is sophisticated and they're the deal makers, the attorney still is responsible and must explain even unambiguous terms, and even if the client personally negotiated the terms. So that's a pretty stiff responsibility. Now, for those of you who bank at TD Bank, and certainly an excellent bank. I think the people that work at TD Bank here in Hunterdon County, you know, are great, easy to deal with, and very helpful. However, the bank is facing a half a dozen suits challenging its overdraft fees as excessive. And that's even though it agreed in 2013 to a $62 million settlement of this multi-district litigation challenging its overdraft fee practices. And what's happening is apparently TD Bank continued many of the practices that were challenged in the prior litigation, even after agreeing to the settlement. And this is according to six newly filed cases, which are all putative class action claims. So if in fact you had a lot of overdrafts, you may want to check that out. Hopefully you didn't. Now, a little bit of a surprise to me that information about a confidential witness who is expected to testify in a New Jersey drug case must be turned over to the defense. And not just information about the case that the expert is testifying about, but also about other matters in which the witness has assisted prosecutors. So this was a on January 12th, the New Jersey Appellate Division, in a case, State versus Hernandez, affirmed a decision that ordered the disclosure and required state prosecutors to search their email system for all emails mentioning the witness. So this is certainly giving, you know, a lot of protection, you know, to people who are, you know, criminally charged. And you know, on a note that deals with sports, and you know, everybody who knows me knows that I'm a huge Green Bay Packer fan. And so I'll talk to you a little bit about the latest flap as far as Governor Christie's trip to Texas, and where he sat in Jerry Jones's box. Everybody around the country saw him, of course, jumping up and down and giving a bear hug to Jerry Jones. So we'll be back after brief announcements from our sponsors, and I'll tell you what's happening on that front.
You're listening to HunterdonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Do you want to lose the weight or keep it off for the rest of your life? There is a difference. My name is Dawn Moore. I am a certified health coach who uses a Take Shape for Life approach to help my clients lose weight, eat healthy, and live longer. Call me at 908-303-5334 or email me, dawn@moreandbetterhealth.com, your prescription for living a healthy, energetic, and intentional life.
I'm Dave Lang with Insight Financial Services and a proud member of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Even in this difficult economy, our family of companies, including Insight Financial, Premier College Funding, and the Insight Tax and Accounting Group, have grown and prospered. I believe that our participation in all of the opportunities that the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce offers to its members strongly contributes to our success.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Well, we're back, and I was about to play for a second time the announcement from the chamber that the contents of the, not only the contents, but the views of the hosts do not necessarily are not necessarily the views of the chamber. But I think if I played it once, I shouldn't have to play it twice in the same set of announcements. In any event, I'm not going to do that, but certainly I am the first to admit that my views are my views and only my views. And, of course, I can express them, which I do. But let's get back to the flap over, or one of the latest flaps over our governor. You know, whether you like and support Governor Christie or not, you know, he sometimes does some things that don't seem to me very smart. And the latest, of course, is the his attending the football games, both in Philadelphia, which surprised me because, after all, a good portion of the New Jersey population, especially in the southern part of the state, are in fact, you know, Eagles fans. But that was, he did that, and he was in Jerry Jones's box rooting for the Cowboys, which was somewhat surprising, more than a little surprising. And that, of course, was shown on television, so people saw him there. And then more recently, of course, he went down to Texas and watched the Dallas game, and that was the Dallas game. And he was in the box, and it was the Dallas game where they then went on to play the Green Bay Packers. So the question, of course, is, you know, what kinds of, from a legal standpoint, the question is, you know, is this proper? Was it proper? How was it paid? And does that create, you know, is it an ethics violation? It certainly there's. There, it looks like perhaps it's an ethics violation, and whether it is, whether there's going to be an investigation, and those are the issues that are coming up. And of course, some people who support the governor are going to say, oh, it's just a Democratic ploy. Other people are going to say, wait a minute, how can the governor of our state take and agree to go to a football game at the that is paid for by one of the owners of the team. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that later, and probably in the sports guys, because not only did he go to Philadelphia and Texas, he also went to Green Bay. And now, I watched the entire Green Bay game. I did not see any scans of Jerry Jones's box in Green Bay. So I think in television they did not show him, meaning Governor Christie, at the game in Green Bay. However, we know he was, and I'll tell you why we know he was, and it was also showed the humor of my quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. But in any event, let's get back to some of the other news as far as, you know, what's happening. There is something else that Governor Christie and Governor Cuomo are involved in, and that is a veto of the Port Authority reform bills. So, and what both governors are doing are they're defying the bipartisan will of both of the state legislatures, both the New Jersey legislature and the New York. And so Republican New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and Democratic New York Governor Andrew Cuomo joined forces on a holiday weekend and rejected sweeping legislation aimed at reforming the scandal-plagued Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. Instead, they each urge the legislature to return to the drawing board and enact legislation mirroring reform proposals released by the two governors. So they didn't like what the legislators did, and so they want it redone, and they vetoed. Both of them vetoed. And, you know, there's been, you know, a lot of controversy over the Port Authority, you know, for many, many years. So that there's another recent case where there was a shoplifting case involving an Apple store, and the appellate division here in New Jersey, this was ruled on December 29th, they ruled that a trial judge did not infringe on the defendant's right to testify by announcing that he would not rule on the prosecutor's request to admit evidence of another crime allegedly committed by the defendant until after the defendant took the stand. Now, the prosecutor had sought to enter a video of a previously alleged shoplifting incident involving the defendant in order to rebut her defense that she took the Apple items by mistake. So the appellate division said, fine, you're going to have to get on the stand because the judge is not going to make the ruling unless you do. Now, the interesting another thing with the Port Authority is about the chairman. The chairman of the Port Authority, David Sampson, has withdrawn his federal suit seeking to block an investigation by the New Jersey State Ethics Commission into allegations that he used his position to benefit clients of his West Orange, New Jersey law firm. And David Sampson is the named partner, one of the named partners in Wolf and Sampson. And he had actually filed the lawsuit in early December claiming the commission lacks authority to investigate a Port Authority officer since the Port Authority is a bi-state agency with its own ethics rules. So he's withdrawn. We'll see what's going to happen on that, but he's at least withdrawn his lawsuit. And what else do we have coming up? Well, we have some other recent things as far as the governor, well, not the government, the government seizures of cars and cash. This is done in some counties much more than others, but certainly it's what we call the civil forfeiture law. And so critics of the New Jersey civil forfeiture law are calling for reform. And they're contending that the government's seizures of cash, cars, and other property lack due process protections and also sometimes target the innocent. So a constitutional challenge to the state forfeiture statute was in fact rejected by the appellate division in 2004. Now, however, in recent months, tales of forfeiture abuse nationwide have become a hot topic on blogs and other popular social media. And apparently, a video of a New Jersey prosecutor's 2011 lecture advocating aggressive seizures of property in criminal cases has helped propel the debate. Now, you'd have to look at the state forfeiture statute, which is NJSA 2C:64-1, to see, in fact, what the powers as far as forfeiture. But I know certainly some years ago that Somerset County was using this statute to not only obtain cars, but real estate, and other, other property, bank accounts, cash, whatever. And so that, there's concern. I mean, the statute is meant to deprive criminals of illegal gains, but it can, of course, depending on how aggressive, it can certainly hurt people who are innocent. Again, talking about the Port Authority reform veto. So we believe that the New Jersey Senate Democrats are set to override the veto of one of two bills that the legislation's sponsor said would have led to dramatic reforms in the Port Authority. I don't know if they voted on that. They were set I think last week in order to, they thought they would do this. And now, two of the state senators, Loretta Weinberg and Joseph Gordon, both of whom are from Bergen County, said that the veto override attempt of their bills will take place. And so I'm not sure if they've done that as of now, if that has been done, but they said they're certainly going to try to override the veto. And difficult to do, but not impossible. There was a case ordinarily. If you file a lawsuit, you have to join all of the parties, meaning you have to name all of the defendants, or you can certainly name anonymous defendants, but you have to name every party that you think should be a defendant. But there has been a suit, the U.S. Court of Appeals, again, for our Third Circuit, which is the appeals court, the appeals federal court. And they reinstated a doctor's suit against a wound care clinic after finding that the judge below misapplied New Jersey's entire controversy doctrine. And the doctrine, of course, is that you have to bring all claims and against all people in the same lawsuit. Now, this is a 2013 suit by a podiatrist, and he claimed that his patients were being diverted by a company that operated. They were the operator of the wound care center at Robert Wood Johnson University Hospital in Hamilton. So this is, as I said, the case has been reinstated, even though apparently the plaintiff, the doctor, did not include everyone that should have been joined in the suit. So that would be a case, if you ever have a concern, that would be something as far as whether or not someone, in fact, can reinstate a suit when against people who have not been included in the original suit. Now, there's a tort claim case that was decided earlier this month. And what this was is actually it was an interlocutory appeal. And they're very rare. What happens is ordinarily you have to wait till the end of a trial before you can file an appeal. There are provisions that you can file what we call an interlocutory appeal and ask, it's a motion asking the appellate court to make a decision prior to the end of the case at the trial level. They're very rarely granted. So this is one that was granted. And so the appellate division determined that the motion judge had erred as a matter of law in determining that a licensed comprehensive rehabilitation hospital is subject to provisions of the Nursing Home Act. Now, this was Kessler. It was Kessler Institute for Rehabilitation. And they, so what they said is that, in fact, a matter of law, that it's not, the Kessler is not covered and is not subject to the provisions of the Act, and including award of treble damages and attorney's fees to a successful litigant against it. We'll be back after we play the news brief.
This is USA Radio News. I'm J.J. Jeffries. President Barack Obama and British Prime Minister David Cameron are pledging a joint effort to fight domestic terrorism following deadly attacks in France. The two leaders met at the White House 1 week after 17 people were killed in attacks in Paris. Afghanistan and Pakistan, home to Al-Qaeda and Taliban militants, and the focus of the longest war in U.S. history, face a new emerging threat from the Islamic State group. Officials have told the Associated Press that disenchanted extremists from the Taliban and other organizations, impressed by the Islamic State group's territorial gains and slick online propaganda, have begun raising its black flag in extremist-dominated areas of both countries. Penn State is getting back 112 football team wins that were vacated 2 years ago in the Jerry Sandusky scandal, restoring Joe Paterno's status as the winningest coach in major college football history. I'm J.J. Jeffries.
589%. 589%? That is how much more fat you could burn if you were using the 10-2 and a chew weight loss system from ilikehowilook.com. Hi, how in the world are you anyway? I'm Andy Willoughby. A double-blind controlled clinical study showed that the 10-2 and a chew weight loss system burned 589% more fat than exercise and dieting alone. Think how much easier it'll be to lose weight. Go to ilikehowilook.com and read the study for yourself. You swallow a small capsule at 10, another at 2, and eat a tasty collagen protein candy chew anytime you need a snack. And with that, you could burn 589% more fat. Watch the video at ilikehowilook.com to get the full story. Most people notice a curbed appetite and more energy the very first day. It's safe, all natural, there's a money-back guarantee, and they'll even send you free samples. Go to ilikehowilook.com. ilikehowilook.com.
Hi, I help students gain admission to colleges that are a great academic, social, and financial fit, where they will be successful, happy, and graduate on time with minimal debt. Email Diana at creativecollegeconsulting.com for a free consultation.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com. Mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Well, we're back on the law. We're back on the law. We're back on the radio. The program is It's the Law, and I'm Pat Smits. Those of you who know me know that I limit my practice to family law matters, but for the program, I try to bring you up-to-date news on other areas of the law, and certainly have guests on talking about different areas of law. We're going to, in a few weeks, have an attorney on talking about franchise law. I recently had a consultant who handles questions for franchises and franchisees. He was on the program, and I think that, you know, I'll try to continue doing that. And if anyone has any suggestions for the program, I'm always happy to hear about them. As I said, my name is Pat Smits. My office number is 908-236-7530. Now, the there's a case on remitter, but that's probably a little, you know, esoteric. But there was a there's another probably a dozen suits claiming that GAF Materials Corporation sold defective composite outdoor decking materials, and these cases are being centralized in the U.S. District Court for the District of New Jersey, and that was by order of the Judicial Panel on Multi-District Litigation. Now, what this means is that cases such as this are not limited to New Jersey, and so that the courts are trying for a judicial economy to not only cases that may be a number of cases around New Jersey, but also what we call multi-district. And this is this particular case. It was a putative class action. There are a number of suits, and they concern the composite decking manufactured and sold by GAF under the names Elk Cross Timbers and Duralife. So you'd be interested if you or anyone you know, in fact, purchased these compost materials. And the suits claim that the company's decking tends to warp, crack, and swell, and to develop mold, mildew, and fungus, contrary to the company's representations. So obviously, any builders who have used this, any consumers who have used these materials and have had problems, this is going to be a class action suit trying to deal with these claims. Now, there's also a recent case on revocation of license. And this was the Waterfront Commission of New Jersey. It was New York Harbor, the commission, revoked a license to this man's ability to work as a hiring agent on the New Jersey waterfront under the Waterfront Commission Act. And so, yes, it's again another law. There's probably laws for everything. And this one is NJSA 32:23-1 to 225. So his license was revoked for an association with two career offenders who were members of the Genovese crime family, and it said inimical to the policies of the Waterfront Act and contrary to the statute, and for lack of good character and integrity, contrary to another part of that act. And so the appellate division concluded that the commission's findings that the appellate associated with career offenders and lacked good character and integrity were supported by the evidence. So in other words, they upheld that his license was, in fact, revoked. And that was it was done by the commission. It was a commission proceeding on revocation of the license, and this was heard by the appellate division, and the decision was written by Judge Hoffman. So these administrative law cases also can be, in fact, appealed to the there are circumstances, but they can be appealed to the appellate division. There was another case that was reported, Mickens versus Misdom in the city of Elizabeth. And in that case, plaintiff sustained a herniated disc as a result of the defendant's truck collision with plaintiff's parked vehicle. So the woman was in a parked vehicle, and the defendant's truck collided with her parked vehicle. And the jury heard evidence that the herniated disc was surgically removed, but the 40-year-old plaintiff has and will continue to live with persistent back pain and discomfort. The jury awarded her a woman, but I'm not sure now whether the plaintiff was a man or woman. It doesn't make any difference. The plaintiff is the one who was hurt. And the award, as I said, was $2.4 million. And what happened then is, in deferring to the jury's denying a new trial or remitter because the trial judge found the verdict was not shocking to the judicial conscience. Now, the court also recognized the judge's decision was supported by his own conscience, which was derived as permitted by He versus Miller from a judge's own experiences as a trial judge and practicing attorney. So in this case, the defendants obviously asked the jury, the defendants asked the judge to reduce the award to the plaintiff. And instead, the judge deferred to the jury's assessment of the evidence and also the trial judge's feel of the case. He affirmed the decision, and he denied a new trial or remitter, which is really reduction of the award. And there's been a lot of criticism because, people will say that a judge should not reduce an award that's been granted by a jury. But the reason for it is that, you don't want runaway juries, and the trial judges, have a right to allow it, meaning allow a reduction, based on their feel of the case and comparable verdicts. So that the point of this is that someone with the same type of injury should not get a huge award because of the county it's filed in, when a comparable case, the award would be much less. And frankly, what you would find is that most times it's said that the jury awards in cases in Hunterdon and Somerset are much lower than they would be if the case was tried in Elizabeth or Newark or some of the other counties. And certainly the reason that people think that is based on what they've seen over the years with respect to awards here in Hunterdon County and Somerset County versus the awards they see for the same type of injuries in, other counties. And when I say people, it's really attorneys. The attorneys talk, the attorneys get a sense of what is, in fact, a reasonable award for a certain type of injury. And so that's why, however, the judges can reduce the amount if they feel that it was unjustifiably high. So the another case where the appellate court okayed a patient's testimony on a dentist's competence. Now that means that the patient testified not having an expert testify. So this was a dental patient who claimed to have had the wrong tooth pulled. So pretty easy to know whether it's the right tooth or the wrong tooth. And the question was, did the patient need to have an expert testify? And he was permitted, when he was testifying, to call the oral surgeon incompetent. And he was able to do that on the witness stand. And he received a $50,000 jury award. And that was upheld by the appellate court, and they ruled that the plaintiff calling the defendant dentist or oral surgeon incompetent, while not based upon acquired expertise, was not expert testimony. So that's why they said that it was not expert testimony, and so therefore he didn't need an expert. So I don't have much information more than that at this time on this. But this was a case that was decided on January 6th. And what it means is that, if a dentist pulls the wrong tooth, obviously you don't need an expert. You don't need an expert to testify about his level of competence. And I guess most of us would, agree with that type of thing. Now, there was another question is, and this is pretty interesting, I think, a chiropractor who obtained assignment of the Employee Retirement Income Security Act claim. So the patient assigned the claim to him. However, the ruling was that he, the chiropractor, was not required to arbitrate a dispute with Aetna, Inc. over retroactive benefit determinations. So the federal judge in Newark ruled this, and the judge rescinded his previous ruling compelling the doctor to arbitrate based on a recent ruling from the U.S. Court of Appeals in a similar case. So in this case, the chiropractor did not have to go through that. Now, there was also a legal malpractice suit that was revived, and that was against the New Jersey attorney over his non-filing of a tort claims notice. And it was previously thrown out because a judge said the client could have moved ahead anyway. But that's been reinstated by the appellate division, and the appellate division in Murphy versus Shaw overturned the Middlesex County judge, his ruling that waived off the failure to file the notice. So that, you know, everybody has to be careful out there. What can I say? I'm going to just briefly play a few more spots, and then I'll come back if we have any more time before we start with the sports guys.
Hi, my name is Debbie Lentenny of Ashore Shred. I love being a member of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Active involvement in it has given us numerous opportunities to meet other business owners and simultaneously has helped Ashore Shred to grow.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is a Forward New Jersey Coalition member.
London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down. London Bridge is falling down.
In August 2007, the I-35 bridge in Minneapolis collapsed, killing 13 people and injuring 145, including little children trapped on a school bus. The bridge had been rated structurally deficient, but those warnings were ignored.
Build it up with iron and steel, iron and steel, iron.
In New Jersey, there are 479 bridges carrying over 8 million vehicles a day, rated worse.
Iron and steel will bend and bow, bend and bow, bend.
These aren't just bridges waiting to be fixed, they're tragedies waiting to happen. On June 30th, the state's transportation fund will be empty. We need to replenish it now, because next time, it could be your family on that bridge. Go to forwardnewjersey.com and find out how you can help. Paid for by Forward New Jersey.
You know, I have to comment on that and that spot. That's the first time I've heard it, but I'm very familiar with that Minnesota bridge collapse. And the tragedy to the families. And if, in fact, there are 479 bridges in New Jersey that are as bad or worse, this should be of concern to everyone. And I'm not sure the way to go about it. I would certainly listen again to that commercial. But if, in fact, our state transportation fund is running out of money, the question would be why. And it also seems to me that they're going to have to start closing down bridges to avoid tragedies. So I think this is something that people should look into. And because how many of us go over bridges every single day and, you know, without even any thought? And some of the bridges are not huge or long or over the Delaware, but there's certainly many, you know, bridges. Our school buses are going over many bridges. I know I go over a small bridge whenever I come to Flemington. It's a one-lane bridge and seems sturdy enough, but who would know? So that is certainly that's a public service announcement that we should all, you know, take to heed. So we'll be back. I'm going to play one more spot, and then we'll go to the news.
The news is sponsored by Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc.
Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they'll live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their own terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within your reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. That's 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Ameriprise Financial Services, Incorporated. Member FINRA and SIPC.
This is USA Radio News. I'm J.J. Jeffries. President Obama and Britain's Prime Minister are appealing to Congress not to slap more sanctions on Iran while talks on Tehran's nuclear program continue. AP White House correspondent Mark Smith reports.
At a joint news conference, David Cameron said he's been phoning U.S. lawmakers to warn even a bill with future sanctions would be a problem.
They could fracture the international unity that there's been.
And Obama said his message to Congress is hold your fire for a few months.
Nobody around the world, least of all the Iranians, doubt my ability to get some additional sanctions passed should these negotiations fail.
The president says he's still not sure there will be a deal, but would use his veto pen to thwart additional sanctions that would trigger an Iranian walkout and increase the chance the nuclear dispute could lead to war. Mark Smith at the White House.
This is the USA Radio Network. I'm J.J. Jeffries.
For 20 years, you've trusted Lumber Liquidators for the best deals on the best selection of floors. Well, this week, get even more deals in our January flooring sale. Want beautiful hardwood? Get pre-finished solid hardwood from $189. How about gorgeous bamboo that's twice as hard as oak? We've got strand bamboo for $219. Looking for top quality laminate? This week, get almost half off our thickest and best laminate, plus other great flooring deals and 18-month special financing. Don't wait. The January flooring sale's going on now. Visit LumberLiquidators.com to find a store near you.
Hi, how in the world are you anyway? I'm Andy Willoughby from ILikeHowILook.com. I have found something that could help you lose 10 to 15 pounds in the next 30 days without starving yourself or exercising to exhaustion. Just go to ILikeHowILook.com and watch the short video. ILikeHowILook.com uses hydrolyzed collagen protein to help you lose weight and tone up. So watch the video at ILikeHowILook.com and maybe soon you'll be saying, I like how I look.
In the wake of the Paris terror attacks, New York's police department is quietly expanding training for active shooter situations in which terrorists arm themselves with high-powered rifles and open fire. Commissioner William Bratton says the new training for the nation's largest police force is based in part on lessons brought back from an NYPD team that was sent to Paris and given widespread access to the scene of the shootings. Bratton says every police officer will be given information to carrier in their memo books on how to deal with active shooters. A federal magistrate has ordered that a 20-year-old Ohio man charged with plotting an attack at the U.S. Capitol remain held without bond. Christopher Lee Cornell appeared before Magistrate Stephanie Bowman in a brief detention hearing Friday afternoon. He was brought to the federal courthouse in downtown Cincinnati under tight security. He is charged with plotting to attack the Capitol with pipe bombs and shoot government officials. I'm J.J. Jeffries.
My name is Jeannie. I'm able to work from home and be a full-time mom, and that means everything to me.
Hi, how in the world are you anyway? This is Andy Willoughby with the Three-Step Plan Home-Based Business System. Thousands of Americans are successfully working from home with the Three-Step Plan.
My name is Bill. I've been able to pay off all of my bills and save money.
To find out how you could work from home with your own home-based business, go to 3-STEP-USA or call 800-480-2102. 800-480-2102.
The U.S. Air Force has a shortage of pilots. USA Radio's Cub Buning explains.
As the demand for drone aircraft use in the military grows, so does the demand for those to operate the growing new wave of technology. However, our current stable of able pilots is at an all-time low. With need for both airstrikes and surveillance, this is an overworked group of soldiers, and General Mark Welsh admits this is not a new problem for his department.
They're just worn out, because this is not a new problem. It's been going on since 2007.
as the requirement keeps increasing and all our solutions to it keep lagging the requirement change.
Air Force Secretary Deborah Lee James spoke about adjusting the budget to make it possible to bring in more pilots capable of commanding a remote aircraft.
We will seek recently qualified active duty RPA pilot volunteers to deploy for 6 months to some of these distressed RPA units.
In an attempt to find more pilots, the Air Force will also be tapping into the National Guard and Reserve. I'm Cub Buning.
A former substitute teacher who showed a movie featuring graphic sex and violence to a high school class has been convicted of